Brother Lover, written by 20-something, read by Define Strange. Dean and Sam have set up a number of rules to maintain order and a lack of killing each other over the years. Most of them are pretty straightforward. He who smelt it did not dealt it. Own your farts, and that means you, Sam. If you're going to have sex, don't do it in the car, although Dean considers that one more a guideline than anything else. Finish the job. Do not get between Dean and his pie. However, and it doesn't happen a lot, they have to invoke, "I saw her first." Generally speaking, Dean's tastes and Sam's tastes in women, and most other things, are more than different enough to not create a need for a rule, but after the waitress in Tuscaloosa, well, they'd looked at each other in the car the next morning, and knew they needed to set some groundwork up, in case it ever happened again. Which, Cass is not a girl. But Dean still feels like he's watching Sam pick up someone he totally saw first. Have you read Liverotti's works? He mostly specialized in Near Eastern spirits, but he did some really cool stuff with traditional Mediterranean water creatures, Sam says, legs crossed Indian style under him. Cass is delicately perched on a corner of the bed, as if he expects it to betray him, or like it's unable to handle the weight of his angelic awesomeness or something. Dean sullenly cleans a knife while thinking spitefully that judging by Sam's expression, it should be piles of tiger beet between him and Cass, not ancient texts on demons. Cass tilts his head thoughtfully, as if he's reconsidering something, as if Sam is unexpected and curious. And Dean is really trying not to get proprietary, but damn it, that's his look. I found his works to be insightful indeed. The man himself, Cass says, trailing off, shaking his head slightly. Rarely have I met someone so dedicated to the protection and preservation of human life. Sam just nods seriously, but Cass gives him that trademark significant look, saying, "But I have met people who rival even his dedication recently." And Sam blinks and turns pink around the edges. And what the fuck is going on here? "Thanks, Cass," Sam mutters, straightening the corners on a pile of books. And Dean is really trying to swallow his petty bitterness here, but his mouth is dry and metallic tasting, and he totally hates everything. He finds himself standing abruptly, because if he doesn't walk out, he's going to be an asshole, and really, he's trying to cut back. "I'm getting a drink," Dean mutters, and doesn't offer to get either of them anything, although Cass has discovered he actually likes ginger ale, and Sam does not turn down a Coke, ever, because if he asks, he's going to ask like a dick. He snags the motel room key off the bedside table, and blows out the door before he says something he regrets. But it doesn't stop him from catching the little look between Sam and Cass, meaning somewhere between "what the fuck" and "what's up his ass," or, in Cass's case, sheer bewildered confusion. Dean walks fast, unexpectedly furious, and even more furious with himself, because this weird, sullen teenaged acting out he hasn't indulged in since he was about 15. He nearly trips on a crack in the concrete, which only pisses him off further, until he gets to the flickering vending machine, which is, predictably, out of Dr. Pepper. He hears the fluttering, ripping noise a half a second before the "Dean," low and concerned, using the voice Cass normally uses for portents and omens. Dean sighs, wondering if Sam taught Cass rock, paper, scissors just so they could choose fairly who would have to come out and talk to Dean. He bangs his head against the scratched plastic proclaiming "soda" in a graphic from the early 80s. He punches the button for a Sprite. "Yeah, Cass," Dean says, feeding another series of nickels in one by one, hoarding the quarters for laundry. Cass remains silent until Dean finally turns around, accepting the ginger ale Dean drops in his pocket with a blink. With Cass here, staring at him solemnly, like Dean's funk is something he'd like to smite, righteously, but doesn't know how, Dean cannot help but smile and feed another 20 nickels into the vending machine, dropping the resulting coke into Cass's other pocket, settling the lopsided trench coat. "I'm fine," Dean says, bumping shoulders casually with Cass as he heads back towards the room, only to stop a few steps later, looking back over his shoulder and to find Cass standing there, staring at him baffled, but something like fond. "You coming?" Dean asks, gruff with pleasure. Cass nods and says yes, but from where Dean is standing, it sounds like always, and his good humor repaired, Dean can almost completely ignore Sam's pleased expression when Cass hands him the coke. All this, though, goes out the fucking window when the inside jokes start. Which, he says inside jokes, but it's more like Sam will make some nerdy reference to whatever they're chasing this week, and Cass will look at him. And really, Dean knows this sounds like serious, crazy-eyed, John Hinckley, drive-across-the-country-in-diapers shit, but he can't seem to stop himself. Which, when they first met, Dean was constantly sort of worried Cass was going to smite Sam on principle or something, so, if anything, he should be pleased that Cass and Sam are getting along so well. And he's further horrified because he hasn't been this psychotically jealous since about the sixth grade when Charlie Billups had started going steady with Sarah Nolan, who may or may not still be the girl of Dean's dreams, and this line of thought should really make Dean feel more uncomfortable. Which is doubly ridiculous, because really, Cass isn't a girl, and it's not like Dean's being dumped. It just feels that way. And it doesn't help when Sam does shit like order Cass lemonades in tired little southern diners, or when Cass brings Sam books he thinks he might like that Dean strongly suspects have been stolen from libraries that don't even exist anymore. They're in the middle of a heat wave in Meridian, and Sam has a huge smile on his face as he's explaining to Cass that he should really take off his coats or people are going to think he's crazy when it finally hits him. They're courting each other. Dean tries not to wear his bitterness on his sleeve the next morning as Sam lectures him about taking better care of himself as he's taking communion at the altar of the porcelain god after going out last night and trying to drink or fuck anything that looked at him twice. He thinks he might have found an easy listening station and cried as he listened to Celine Dion before passing out in the car, but he's hoping that was a nightmare, because he can only explain so much with tequila. He has yet another epiphany, halfway between Meridian and Jackson, as he tries to put as much distance between him and the night before as possible, stealing glances at Sam as he contentedly reads his totally borrowed book. There's being irritated because your little brother is poaching on lands clearly staked out as your homestead, and then there's Sam being in love with Cass. So Dean takes a deep breath, and like he usually does the best he can by Sammy. "You know, he likes maple candy," Dean says, keeping his eyes steadfastly on the road, but he can feel Sam staring at him, in addition to the small questioning noise he makes. "Cass, he, likes maple candy." Because it's true, and Dean has spent a night with Cass after they'd, and by they'd he means he had dragged Cass unwillingly, raided a candy kitchen while ganking a ghost in Bethany Beach when Sam had been out communing with nature and getting sand everywhere, and they'd ruled out taffy and most types of chocolate, but Cass had loved the maple candy, breaking off chunks and getting his fingers sticky. Dean had ordered pizza, and Cass had picked off the toppings before eating, and despite the fact that Dean thinks it's his constitutional responsibility to get as many meat toppings on his pizza as possible, since then he always makes sure there's at least half a pizza that's plain cheese, just in case Cass feels like trying pizza again that night. Sam just sort of stares at Dean like he thinks Dean has lost his mind, which, really, Dean can't argue with that assessment. "Just, you know, heads up, FYI. Dean tries, while contemplating driving them off the road and into an embankment to end his misery. He doesn't really know why he's bothering, considering that Sam has gotten more women to commit to him than Dean could shake a stick at, and Dean sometimes has trouble convincing waitresses to sleep with him one time. But Cass is different, and if Sam is what he wants, if Sam wants Cass, then all Dean should, all he can do, is grease the wheels. Stan still looks confused, and yeah, Dean is right there with him, but he nods. Okay, Sam finally says, eventually going back to his book. Dean figures he'll do better next time. Cass shows up for dinner at a nondescript diner, and Dean figures that this is his chance. But it's amazingly difficult to get them to sit together on the opposite side of the booth from Dean. They're stubborn bastards, Dean has to give them that, and he hopes they don't feel like they have to, whatever, hide it or something, because of or for Dean. Although they're in the Deep South, it's probably not a bad idea. When he finally succeeds in getting them to sit to one another, they're both staring at him, absolutely confused, and Dean thinks it's a good thing they're like MFEO, because seriously, no one can be that dense. Dean slaps a smile on his face and ignores the inner voice that tells him eating his pain is a one-way street to a heart attack in Fattersonville, as he orders his cheeseburger and fries with a side of onion rings, too, in addition to the milkshake. Sam just sort of shrugs, as if to say, "What can you do?" and immediately asks Cass about the Enochian sigils written on their ribs, and Dean can't help but slurp at his milkshake in a hell of his own making. It's like having David Attenborough in his head. "Observe the rare Dorcas Gaius Samus Winchesterus, and the even more rare Dorcas Angelus Castielus in their mating ritual. If one looks carefully, you may detect the Miss Your Fucking Boat Deanus Winchesterus." Dean doesn't really know Latin, okay, which is probably reason number 19,203,492 that Sam and Cass are meant to be, and Dean's only friend is a cheeseburger. He feels like he's wearing a sign that says third wheel, and the whole diner is staring at him, wondering why he's sitting in on Sam and Cass's homo date. Dean sighs and pushes his fries toward Cass, who only likes them when they're cold and terrible and gummy, because Cass is a freak, but Dean likes him anyway, and, oh God, Dean likes Cass. He's not sure what he says, but he finds himself safely and quietly freaking out in a locked bathroom stall, so it has to at least have gotten him that far. He's horrified to realize this explains all of the terrible, neurotic, codependent behavior he's been indulging in, including the Celine. He leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees so he can bury his face in his hands, because this is terrible. Dean doesn't know how long he sits there, pondering how totally beyond fucked he is, but it's long enough that a pair of vaguely dusty loafers appear in front of his stall door. "Dean, are you all right?" Cass asks, and Dean would like nothing more than to enumerate the billions of ways he's totally not all right. But instead, he just takes a deep, shaky breath and throws on the smile he wears when everything has gone to shit and there's nothing else to do. "Yeah, Cass, must have eaten something bad for lunch. I'll be out in a bit," Dean says, rubbing at his face with his hands. The loafers hesitate, but eventually head back out to Sam. Dean takes another deep breath, because he really just wants to find a bar and drink until he can't see straight, but two nights in a row is probably a bit much for Sam's credulity and Dean's liver, and if Dean doesn't want to think about why he feels fucked up and terrible, then he really doesn't want Sammy thinking about it either. Dean thinks maybe tomorrow they'll head north, because he really doesn't want to drive through Louisiana depressed and shitty and secretive. He actually likes Louisiana. And maybe tomorrow he'll claim to still have a stomach ache or something, so he'll suggest Cass should sit up front with Sam, so he has some company to keep him awake driving through Mississippi, because it's the most boring place on the planet short of Montana. And then someday Dean will walk in on them making out or something, and then he'll be Sam's best man at their wedding, and then Uncle Dean to their children adopted from Lao or something, and Dean's teeth hurt he's grinding them so hard. "It is what it is," he reminds himself, and takes another deep breath, avoiding looking too closely in the mirror on the way out of the bathroom. He argues bad Chinese and brushes off Sam's vague face and Cass's concern, and makes Sam drive in the morning. By the time they get to Memphis, Sam is staring at him like he's gone past insane into psychotic, and Cass has been frowning and staring at his hands, folded in his lap, for near an hour. Sam just shakes his head and makes this frustrated noise as he gets out of the car, which Dean doesn't understand. He and Cass had a nice, dorky conversation full of promise about Sanskrit most of the way here. There's no call to be discouraged. Cass frowns as if to say something from the front seat, but he makes no move to talk. Dean frowns. "Something bothering you, Cass?" he asks, because the last hour has reeked of some sort of weird tension. Cass's shoulders hitch like he heaves a sigh, but he doesn't exhale. "It was different sitting here with Sam today," he finally says, and Dean figures that's his way of saying thanks for hooking a brother up, so Dean just slaps on a smile. "Yeah, I'm glad you two had fun. You have a lot in common, you know. You're both smart, you're both great," Dean says, loosely waving a hand, trying to talk up Sam without sounding like an idiot. Cass tilts his head to one side. "Sam is a good person," Cass agrees. And from anyone but Castiel, that would sound lacking, but instead it sounds like praise indeed. "I appreciate his insights into humanity." Dean affixes his smile a little more forcefully. "Yeah, he's the Winchester good for conversation," Dean tries, only to be met with a solemn frown from Castiel and an expression that looks like a storm on the horizon. "Dean, the conversations I have had with you defined my existence," Cass says severely, and for a moment Dean can't breathe. His stomach flips briefly as Cass goes on to add, expression gentled somewhat, "Please remember that." Dean tries to smother the feeling of warmth that blossoms somewhere between his ribs and spread towards his toes, but he can't stop a real smile from flickering across his face. "Yeah, ditto," he finally manages. Cass looks like he wants to say more, but Sam reappears, jingling keys in his hand. Dean quickly heads out the driver's side door, and Cass blinks back in outside the car, looking kind of smitey around the eyes. Dean's heart lodges itself somewhere around his stomach when he notices the two sets of keys in Sam's hand, and he doesn't know what he's going to say when Sam leans in and hisses at Dean. "Look, you've had PMS for 4 states, and you're acting like someone pissed in your Wheaties. Cass is flipping out, and you two are going to settle your damn issues, and I will see you both in the morning acting like normal people, or at least like your regular bugfuck crazy selves." Sam grabs his duffel out of the trunk and moves faster than he does on most hunts, flinging a key back behind him overhand. Dean instinctively catches it and blankly stares at the tag that says 18 on it for a moment, before looking at Cass, who blinks out. A chorus of alarm bells and sirens are going off in his head as he slowly grabs his bag, locks the car, and trudges toward room 18. Sam knows. He knows, he knows, he knows, and Dean's going to hell again for being the worst brother ever, and he's in the middle of trying to figure out how someone even begins a "sorry, I'm in love with him too" speech, which, Christ, how did he even get to this sorry-ass point, when he opens the door to see Castiel sitting on the bed. "Oh," Dean manages, like he hasn't just dropped his bag and nearly flung his key across the room. Cass levels him with a stare. "Dean," he replies. Dean smiles weakly. "So weird, huh? I don't know what Sam was thinking," Dean starts, but Cass cuts him off. "I asked Sam to get 2 rooms, he says suddenly. Dean blinks and opens his mouth, but Cass plows on mercilessly. "I wanted to make sure I had not upset you, and I did not believe that you would speak to me freely if Sam were with us." Dean sighs, because of course Cass would assume that he'd done something wrong. "What makes you think that?" Dean tries, because the longer he can deflect Cass, maybe he can think of a way to avoid the issue entirely. Castiel frowns deeply. "We do not speak alone as often as we used to. You seem to not want to be near me. Sam has told me these are usually indicative of being upset with someone," Cass says, and Dean can tell he's trying for some kind of tact, but it still feels like a slap across the face. "No, Cass, I'm not upset with you," Dean replies, quickly, because if he's certain about anything right now, he's not upset with Cass. Well, other than for the whole trapping him into trying to talk about feelings, which falls under the category of everyone else in his life, too, so... "I'm sorry you thought that," he adds. Cass is still frowning, though, so he's definitely not out of the woods. "If you have something weighing on your mind, you could always tell me," Cass says, looking sort of down and to the left, which firmly suggests that Cass has been sort of eavesdropping on his general state of being pissed and depressed, but at least had the courtesy to not flat-out peek into his mind and find out what it is, and Dean is grateful for small favors. "It's really sort of a personal problem, Cass," Dean tries, feeling like a jerk, because predictably, Cass makes that small, wounded face that he gets when they run into Dick Angels and he comes back from trips to find God. "But it is a personal problem. It's not Cass's or Sam's fault that he just can't suck it up and be happy for them." "Dean, you're hurting," Cass just says, finally, looking frustrated and unhappy, and Dean wants to drown himself in the shower because he's just being such an unpardonable douche. "Look, Cass, I want you and Sam to be happy." Dean finally settles for that, because it's not a lie. It's just not the whole truth, either. Cass looks puzzled. "Dean, Sam is upset because he believes you to be angry with him," Cass says. "Both Sam and I are only distressed because we believed we had done something to merit your censure." Dean shakes his head. No, it's great that you guys are together. You're perfect for each other. I'm just..." Dean starts, but breaks off as Cass's eyebrows nearly fly off his forehead in a very human gesture of surprise. "What?" Cass blinks at Dean. "Do you mean to say..." Cass tries, like he's wholly overwhelmed with confusion at humanity, like the time they tried to take him to see Avatar. "Dean, do you believe Sam and I to be romantically inclined towards each other?" Dean sort of feels like he's been spun around very fast. "Are you telling me you're not?" he asks, incredulously, because he's pretty sure one of those books was poetry. Cass stares at Dean. "I am not," Cass says vehemently, and wait. "Do you mean you're telling me you aren't in love with Sam? Or you're telling me you aren't telling me you're not in love with Sam?" Dean asks, because, wait, he's still confused. Cass frowns, like he's faced with insurmountable foes. "Dean, I have never felt any emotion other than appreciation and friendship for your brother," he says solemnly, like he's testifying in court. But Dean's busy feeling a little lightheaded, so he just sort of wavers for a moment. "Oh, well, that's..." Dean trails off, still a little disbelieving. "Good." Cass shakes his head, slowly. "I am surprised you interpreted my interest in Sam in that fashion," Cass admits, and even the word interest sort of makes Dean tense all over. "When in fact," Castiel continues, eyes luminously, inhumanly blue, "I endeavored to become his friend partly because of my interest in you." Dean feels like he's falling on a roller coaster, weightless and dizzy. "What?" he finally asks. Cass isn't smiling, but there is a hint of something rueful, amused, and dear in the corner of his mouth, and Dean can't help but feel a little bit hopeful at that. "I was told it was customary to forge a bond with the family members of one whose affections you seek," Cass says, and Dean feels his mouth drop open slightly, and he's sure it's a super unattractive look, but... "What the fuck?" "Who? What?" Dean asks again, with feeling. Cass looks faintly sheepish, and Dean can tell he won't like this a bit, at all. "I confess, Gabriel brought the matter to my attention," Cass says, and Dean is torn between laughing and crying, because taking relationship advice from Gabriel, fucking Gabriel is like, God, Dean can't even think of an appropriately disastrous parallel. He directed me to a source of contemporary advice, Cass adds, pulling a magazine out of his inside coat pocket, and, Jesus Christ, fucking Gabriel gave Cass a Cosmo. Dean is about to have a serious breakdown of some kind, when finally the meaning behind the whole thing hits him like a 2x4. Someone whose affections you seek, Dean repeats quietly. Cass tilts his head slightly to one side, as if Dean should know, as if it's common knowledge. I was taken aback that you would think I was pursuing Sam, Cass says calmly. I would have thought that my love for you was obvious. Dean takes a deep, wrecked, shuddering breath. Clearly not so much, Dean establishes, although he's smiling so hard his cheeks hurt. He plucks the magazine out of Cass's unprotesting hands, snorting at 5 ways to catch him and keep him. In the future, you should probably just tell me rather than relying on Cosmo. Cass nods solemnly, like he's taking it under serious advisement. Dean, I am in love with you, Cass says, and when Dean blinks, he adds, you instructed me to tell you. Dean laughs and pulls Cass up by his lapels and kisses him because Cass loves him and isn't dating Sam, and Cass read Cosmo to figure out how to tell him. Jesus. Cass responds eagerly, cupping Dean's face with his hands and brushing a thumb behind the shell of Dean's ear. Dean shivers and stares at Cass. Where did you learn that? He demands. Cass just looks toward the ground where Dean dropped the magazine, which, oh God, in hot pink font, size 72, it proclaims, 10 places that will drive him wild. Dean swallows. Did you read the whole magazine? Cass smiles. I believe in thorough research, Cass replies, slipping a hand under the edge of Dean's t-shirt, and holy shit, he made a joke. About sex. I couldn't agree more, Dean manages thickly. Cass makes a pleased noise, leaning in to kiss Dean again. It seems as though I ended up with the studious Winchester brother after all, Cass murmurs against his mouth, and smiles as Dean just laughs and laughs. The end.